Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. If this is your first time joining us, please go ahead and give us a like on Facebook. Come meet our community of geeks and just hang out. You know, we have a lot of cool stuff to talk about, of course, including our upcoming episode tonight. Oh, also, I just released our set list for the next few months of topics. So if you have some thoughts on that, let us know. Let us know what you're thinking and, you know, contribute. Hey, because this is kind of a family thing for sure. Anywho, tonight I am joined by my considerate cupcake, Christopher.
Oh, man, why do I get to go first today? I'm usually the last one, you know. People remember the last thing they heard, so that's why I always go last, because people remember me, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's good to be here to talk about, you know.
That's it.
Yeah. Yes. Caramel cords, babe, you know what I'm saying? That's what we got to do.
For sure.
Yeah,
that's good.
Cupcakes.
I'm so glad I let you go first tonight.
In more ways than one, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. All right, I'm also
all
here.
Listeners just left.
That's it. You just scared literally everyone off. I am also joined by my sultry sister, Stacey.
Bonsoir from the depths of my Cabernet Sauvignon.
Fantastic. And my killer creature, Gary.
Is that with a K?
Yes, with a K.
Killer queen?
Killer
can I get
queen.
A killer queen?
You can get a killer queen. You can have a chaos queen. You can have
yes.
a chaos quinthrit if you'd like.
It's too many Ks.
So many Ks. And, of course, I'm April, your host, as always. And, again, we have such an exciting episode for you guys tonight. We've mentioned him a few times in the previous episodes. We have the one, the only, Aleister Crowley. Yes, here we are. I can't even believe that we're here. Like, and I'm thinking here, I'm like, shit, how are we going to get through all of him in like 2 hours?
I mean, that's a lot to get through.
There's a lot
just,
to get
just
through.
The body itself.
Just the body itself is a lot to get through. I mean, we try and keep our episodes to an hour, but I'm positive right now this is going to go over. Like, undoubtedly, we are going to
If ever there were a episode that I knew was going to be filled with tangents and offshoots, it's this one.
Yeah.
Pretty fair.
Most definitely.
So born as Edward Alexander Crowley on October 12, 1875, in Leamington Spa, Warwickshire, England, Crowley was the son of an extremely devout evangelical Christian parent, Edward and Emily, owner of a family brewing business that would allow him to retire before Aleister was born. Emily had a difficult relationship with her son, actually giving him one of his monikers, the Beast. In March 1887, when Crowley was 11, his father died of tongue cancer.
What the fuck is tongue cancer? How do you die from that? Why not just cut it out?
Well, I mean, this is back in the 1870s.
Yeah, and Aleister wasn't old enough yet to cut his dad's tongue out.
Yeah,
or crazy
sure
enough yet.
He would have done that and then sacrificed it or something, but, you know, whatever. So, that's terrible. Which Crowley recalled as a turning point in his life. Aleister idolized his father, and his death was devastating.
I mean, that would be about the time frame when, I mean, about 11 years old, you think they're starting to come into their own, starting to, like, slowly start thinking for themselves, and the person that is your idol and your hero in life just croaks because of the most ridiculous sounding disease. Oh,
well,
man.
Yeah, and I mean, you wonder if he would have turned the way he did in the future had he not lost his dad so young.
Yeah, during his formative years, for sure.
Right.
Sparks his lifelong interest with death and the occult. Maybe he's trying to bring his dad back.
You know, the way it usually happens.
Hmm.
Like, you have an experience with...
A traumatic experience?
Yeah, death, and then all of a sudden it consumes you because you have to understand. Like, you have to understand what's happening. You have to feel like you have some sort of control. And maybe that's what Crowley has been suffering, you know, was suffering from his whole life, is this lack of control. So he created it in these architectures and these systems to keep himself... to be able to make choices and decisions for himself, even if they were arbitrary choices and decisions set in a system that didn't actually exist.
Do you think that's why David Bowie had an interest in the occult?
Well, I think that the occult is sexy. Mm. I mean, yeah, for sure. Like, that could be a real reason.
Well, I mean, David Bowie is sexy no matter what.
David Bowie is sexy.
I mean, I wish I could rock
it's very
pants.
Sexy.
Yeah, he is... You know, the thing that made most women around our ages bloom. So I just, Labyrinth, that's all I
have
to say.
And more the ways than one.
Yeah.
And more ways than one. But,
that movie Labyrinth is awesome.
It is.
I remember that from when I was a kid.
His pants are a treasure.
David,
just
watching,
also
watching Labyrinth at maybe the age of 11, certainly David Bowie informed my taste in men.
Mm-hmm.
Done. Done.
Nope. Oh, no. The puppies are getting involved. So I would say that on the structure and the belief system and like all the architecture and the control aspect of it, I think that that's very sexy for a lot of people that feel like they don't have a lot of control in their own lives. And I would think that certainly rock stars or celebrities would be some of those people because they are constantly, they're constantly under the gun. They're constantly at the whims of other people and not necessarily at their own whims.
Unless you're Prince.
I mean, even with Prince has fans.
Well, this is true, but Prince also was the kind of guy that was like, it's 2 a.m. in the morning in February, and he's like, I want a camel. And then his assistants have to figure out how to get him a camel. So, you know.
Well, it's funny that you brought up David Bowie, because David Bowie actually references Aleister Crowley in his song Quicksand.
I mean, it's just synchronicities all day. Although, I mean, if you find any, like, any out there story from the past, I feel Aleister probably has some sort of a hand in it, in, like, either the most offshoot way or directly. Like, it's nuts. Like, he has, he had ties to L. Ron Hubbard. He had,
yes.
He has paraphernalia from Jack the Ripper, and he just either collects the artifacts or in like directly influences major people from history. It's crazy.
He still does to this day. I think I would say.
That's what happens when you're that powerful at the power bottom.
All right.
He's really kind of, you know what? He's really kind of creepy looking too. I don't know if we posted this up on our page, but I'm going to take this picture and I'm going to go ahead and share it to our Facebook page. He's just kind of sinister looking.
Well, you know, you got to have the look.
Particularly, I mean, when he was older, he was very sinister looking. Intense, but not bad looking when he was young.
He looks like a much younger Wilford Brimley.
Do you think he had diabetes?
Huh?
He had diabetes?
He did not have the diabetes.
I mean,
He had a lot of other issues.
He looks crazy.
If you imagine, like, the beard.
The beard and mustache.
Yeah.
All right. So, while attending Malvern School and Tonbridge College, he started becoming skeptical of Christianity, as, you know, most people do, pointing out inconsistencies to his professors and rebelling against the Christian morals he was raised with. Crowley was withdrawn from school and sent to study with a tutor at Eastbourne College, where he studied chemistry, chess. How do you study chess? Like, is that a curriculum? Because
maybe it's more like strategy.
I know the colleges I went to didn't offer stress chess class.
Well, I mean, maybe so, this was like
that's an elective I would have taken.
Gentlemen's club. I mean, it was.
Yeah, talking about club. Crowley. So
He-Man, woman hater club.
Well, Crowley was a polymath, and he started playing chess and writing poetry before the age of 5. He was playing chess at 3 years old.
Damn.
Explain to us what polymath is.
It sounds
sure,
like
so,
a child genius.
Kind of
like Beethoven. Beethoven
a child
was playing
genius.
Like...
In his case, yeah, he definitely was way advanced for his age when he was a child. So a polymath is just a person that has a wide-ranging knowledge of a lot of different topics, knows a lot about a lot of things. Like
yeah,
Alexander Hamilton, he was a polymath. Benjamin Franklin would be another one.
So he's usually smart people.
Generally, but, you know, Leonardo da Vinci definitely would be another one.
So, to continue, so he studied chemistry, chess, poetry, and gained an interest in mountain climbing. His hobbies ranged all over the place. On a visit to Sweden, he experienced a life-changing vision, which persuaded him of his spiritual vocation. A calling which he marked by changing his name to Alistair, the Gaelic form of his middle name, meaning man's defender. He referred to this experience as the first of two events that, quote, put me on the road to myself. He recalled, my animal nature stood rebuked and kept silent in the presence of imminent divinity of the Holy Ghost, omnipotent, omniscient and omnipresent, yet blossoming in my soul as if the entire forces of the universe from all eternity were concentrated and made manifest in a single rose. That definitely sounds like some poetry. Man knew how to write.
A lot of his stuff is very poetic and flowery and
well,
exactly what I imagine Englishmen born in the Victorian era would write like.
I think that might be one of the reasons that he has attracted so many people to his way of thinking.
Yeah. I mean, you can find references to Crowley all over the place.
He's in
literature.
He's got his hands in all the pipe. Hands in all the pots.
He does. And more than just the pots.
Gross.
So just 1 year later, in 1897, during a minor illness, Alistair began to contemplate death. He searched for direction in this pursuit of knowledge of the unseen. He started out by reading the Book of Black Magic and of Pacts by A.E. Waite, like the tarot card. Waite, that guy. And wrote to his author asking for guidance. Waite suggested that he read The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary by Counselor Van Eckharthausen. In the summer of 1898, Alistair traveled to Switzerland. He spent his time there mountain climbing and reading The Kabbalah Unveiled by S.L. Mathers. One evening, Crowley was relating his interest in alchemy to a group of men in the beer hall and was overheard by a practicing chemist and alchemist, Julian Baker. Crowley related that Baker kindly took him aside afterwards. Though he had little understanding of the subject at the time, perhaps Baker sensed in the young man an earnest talent. Baker treated young Crowley with seriousness and talked to him at length. Crowley was thrilled and excited and exacted a promise from Baker to meet with him in London and introduce him to a man who would be able to help him in his quest for wisdom. The promise was kept, and Baker introduced Crowley to one of the two men whom Israel Regardi later identified as Alistair's primary mentors and role models in the Golden Dawn. This man was George Cecil Jones, known in the order by the motto Volo Nocere, I want to know. Jones agreed to sponsor Crowley's initiation into the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a secret society dedicated to the study of the occult.
That's where it started. It's his origin story. It's like Batman. Just, you know, you got to start somewhere.
I heard something really interesting about the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. And it was that this is where, like, hermetically sealed actually comes from.
Really?
Yeah. So, because it was meant to mean, I think it's because it was meant to mean like pure or like uncut, like unspoiled. So hermetic became this, and I mean, I'll look it up, but I think that's, it came from Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn specifically.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, man.
So a lot of the beliefs and processes of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn are based in Rosicrucianism and in Freemasonry. And the three founders, William Robert Good Woodman, William Wynne Westcott, and Samuel Liddell Mathers, were all Freemasons.
That's
everybody's a Freemason.
Well,
yeah.
Important people.
Well, later in his life, Crowley also studied with the Rosicrucians. I mean, he studied a lot of, like, Eastern mysticism, just a little bit of everything. And the Golden Dawn system was based on hierarchy and initiation, like Masonic lodges with different levels. The only difference was women were admitted on an equal basis with men. It wasn't a separate order. And the Golden Dawn was actually the first of three orders, although the three were referred to together as the Golden Dawn. In the first order, you learned esoteric philosophy that was based on the Kabbalah and personal development through study and awareness of the basics of astrology, tarot, geomancy. The second level, or the inner order, was also called the Ruby Rose and the Cross of Gold. And there you learned magic, scrying, astral travel, and alchemy. Then the third order, yeah, the highest level was the secret chiefs. And they were said to be highly skilled, and they supposedly directed the activities of the lower two orders by spirit communication.
What is spirit communication?
Like, they had spirits, so the chiefs in charge of the third level had spirits communicate what needed to be done to the chiefs of the lower levels.
Okay, so can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Welcome back. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I have been talking, like, this whole time. And, like, one or two, you know, everybody's just talking over me. I'm like, are they trying to tell me something? I don't know what was going on with my phone, but, when I was looking at this, I was looking at the origins of this Hermetic Order, and with the whole link to the Freemasons and Masonic lodges and things like that, and it got me thinking about how, as a Catholic, I'm not allowed as a Catholic to be a part of organizations like the Masons or things like that. And I always kind of wondered, like, okay, why? And because, you know, you don't really know anything about those organizations and what they do in their initiations and things like that, unless you're a member or you're invited. So reading about this kind of gives me a little bit of insight as to why that might be.
It's possible. I mean, with Aleister Crowley, all things are possible. So, Carrie, earlier today we spoke about mottos. So I see that you have you've been delving into all the mottos.
Yes.
What is your favorite one that you've come across?
I got super interested in the mottos because they're just I don't know. It's like picking a secret code name. Like, if you got to choose your secret code name, what would it be? And the members of the Order of the Golden Dawn, some of them chose mottos in Latin. Some of them were in Gaelic. It kind of varied. And gosh, there are so many good ones.
They all seem to be, like, at the very least, slightly religious.
Yeah, just a little. Or just kind of creepy.
I mean, I'm cool with creepy. I would like to keep it, like, I think if I had one, I'd like to keep it sort of mysterious. Like, you don't quite know what exactly it means, but it just sounds cool.
The one that creeps me out the most is the one that was Yates, Daemon a Deus Inversus, the devil is the reverse of God. That just sounds scary in Latin, and when you do the translation, it's just like, what the fuck?
I kind of liked W.R. Woodman's Magna Est Veritas et Praelibet bit. Great is the truth, and it shall prevail.
That's a really cool one.
What about you?
Not so bad.
What about you, babe? What would you say?
I mean, I like the one that I have.
Is it the one that I translated that came out to, like, mild gas?
Yes.
So, I also, we were talking about what our, like, family mottos are based on our last names, or, in Chris's case, his mother's maiden name, because we couldn't find Brzezalski and what that motto was.
I wonder why.
So, April, what was yours?
I'll tell you in just a second.
I'm going to need a perfect Latin pronunciation.
Felis de multa mitis.
And what does that translate to?
Which means mild gas de multa. It means gentle in peace, fearless in war. But what it actually comes from is an Irish proverb, which it basically says, the soothed cat is gentle, which I'm a big cat lady, so that's kind of perfect for me.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Although, while we're on the topic of the Masons, as the token Masonic member here, I will say that the Order of the Eastern Star has a really cool motto, and that is the word fatal, like F-A-T-A-L, which is super scary, right? So you're like, shit, what's about to happen?
It just means the end, does it not?
It doesn't mean the end, no. But it actually means fairest among thousands, altogether lovely. So it means that in a sea of these beautiful people and beautiful women, and like, and I don't mean beautiful like physically, like I mean like you're a good person, like in a sea of really great people with all these great things going on, you are among the fairest of them all, which actually comes from the Bible. So.
And Snow White.
Yeah. I really love that.
Well, I kind of like the direction as far as what April is going. I like my mother's name's motto, which was Verba Volant Scripta Manent, which is spoken words fly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I studied Latin.
I think your wife studied Latin.
Yeah, right?
Spoken words fly away, written words remain.
I really like that one.
Although, for me, I'm not a big writer.
I mean, it just reminds me of what my mom used to tell me when I was in high school, that I shouldn't write anything that I don't want the whole world to see.
This is true, especially in today's age.
Yeah.
You write it down, it's going to be there forever.
Sage wisdom for the masses right there.
Until an EMP takes out all the computers on Earth. Then you'll be saved.
I actually thought an article from The Onion today, this morning, and I laughed about it because I was like, oh shit, this is so timely. And it was about how kids that study Latin are like 100 times more likely to summon the devil. Like, by
oh my god.
I was going to post it, but then I got busy, so I forgot. But this makes me think about it.
I just say, Latin seems like such a difficult language to learn.
It is.
Like,
not
it
fun.
Seems like it takes a lifetime just to learn it.
Straight not fun.
Huh.
It's fun to look at and, you know, see, like, oh, man, that's really cool. But to actually learn it, I'd be like, no, I'd rather slam my weenie in a sliding glass door.
Yeah.
Oh. Kaylee's already decided that she's going to take Latin next year in middle school, and I told her good luck.
I mean, it is fun. It is fun. I'm not going to lie.
Well, Stacy, do you remember your family motto?
Yeah, it's Timen Deum in Vitam, fear God in life. It's for my Scottish clan.
Well, mine is April. You want to translate that for me? Because I'm not even going to attempt that Latin.
Let's see. My neighbor just got home.
Well, you find it. I'll read what it looks like. It looks like Piux Qoeqa Priux.
Okay,
don't think it's the correct pronunciation.
It would be like, it would literally be like, I'm trying to think of other words that it's similar to, because I will not lie, this one is extremely strange. I mean, I don't think you're 100% off on the Piux. It's either
Piux.
I don't think it's Piux. It's either Piux, like literally Piux, or it's pie kind of thing. And then like
yes, exactly.
Quay is definitely right, and then Prue is probably the most accurate.
Is there a Mrs. Queequeg?
Queequeg.
That is a challenging one for sure.
What does it mean?
I mean, bro, I am not fluent. Like, I got a Latin dictionary.
You mean spiritual, but courageous.
Spiritual, yet courageous.
Yeah, I just knew that off the top of the dome piece.
My 5 years of Latin have failed me.
Apparently.
I never knew you took Latin, April. I never knew
that.
Yeah,
man.
She also took French.
My mother made me take Latin. No, I never took French. I never did that.
That was a joke.
I took Spanish. I also took Spanish. I don't remember a damn thing about Latin. I don't remember a damn thing about Spanish. But every once in a while, I'll surprise myself with Latin. I'll be like, oh, yeah, you fucking codex. That's blocking in Latin. Like, I'll be just
that's
not
funny.
That's very random.
Very random.
That's awesome.
We're all know like the root of a word. I'll be like, oh yeah, that comes from you know, fucking cheese grater and people are just like, what are you talking about?
To shred the cheese.
To shred the cheese.
The shred of the cheese.
Yeah. The scapula, that's not just a part on a human body. That's also what they used to use in ancient Rome to clean themselves with oils and a scraper.
They also used to do other weird stuff and ancient Rome as well.
Like,
damn.
Random shit.
I miss you.
So,
we move on?
Well, before we move on real quick, some other people that were members of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, interestingly enough, were Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Bram Stoker, and then
two
we already mentioned.
Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
So he was a part of all this creepiness?
Yep. And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Well, he ended up writing really good stories, so.
this is a little bit of an offshoot, but one of my favorite things to do about history is like read about the interconnectedness and who knew who and all of that, because like there's an overlap, and maybe I can try to find it, between Crowley, Rasputin, Doyle, Houdini, and then you already mentioned him, Chris, the Scientology guy, L. Ron Hubbard.
LRH.
Yeah.
There's an overlap between those five people, and just like, what?
Where's the overlap with Rasputin?
Well, she doesn't know exactly, but she feels it in her soul.
I feel it in my soul. I'll look for it while Stacey carries us on.
Rasputin is a very interesting character in history.
Oh, gosh,
well,
yeah.
Well, I can now link, wait a minute, I can link Rasputin, LRH, Crowley.
What's your link to Rasputin and Scientology?
Conan Doyle and Trump now.
Well, I want to know your link to Rasputin.
And Aleister Crowley.
And L. Ron Hubbard.
I can link all of them. We're talking about all of them on the show right now. They're all linked.
Oh my God.
Okay, well,
you.
I mean, we already know from an older episode that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini were friends.
Yes.
Right.
True thing.
So we already know that. So I've got those two. I'll work on the others. I'm going to diagram.
One fun thing about Rasputin before we go on is, like, definitely one of those figures that, like, if he didn't exist, history would be completely different. Just think about that.
History would be the poorer for it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but fortunately not a dark magician as we believe him to be. But
alrighty.
Stacey, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm just listening to you guys go back and forth. I don't have a bone to pick in this. I'm interested to see what the Venn diagram's gonna look like that Carrie's gonna draw.
They're all magical magicians.
Do you remember that picture I posted a couple weeks ago about this is what Christopher looks like trying to explain aliens? Just insert me in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
well,
exactly.
We all
what
have
I
our
of.
Categories. We all have our subjects.
Yes,
we do.
Nerding out.
All right, so moving on. So throughout the first two decades of his life, Aleister seemed to be aware of a void in his life. Something is missing, something essential, and he was searching, but he wasn't sure exactly what he was seeking. So this Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn had the answer and was able to help him define his goal. What he sought was his own divinity, his holy guardian angel, the Holy Spirit within. The ancient abstraction of a part of a man, which is one with the divine, this goes back to antiquity. So the Apostle Paul alluded to it in the New Testament, in the Christian Bible, in his first letter to the Corinthians, and this is found in chapter 2, verses 9 through 16. It says, but as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of a man conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him, God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For what person knows a man's thoughts except the spirit of the man which is in him? So also no one comprehends the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is from God, that we might understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we impart this in words, not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual truths to those who possess Spirit. The unspiritual man does not receive the gifts of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him, and he is not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual man judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one. For who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ.
Now I know why you need a pastor to read you the Bible.
Also, I would like to say that paragraph 10 actually supports my, so not exactly 10, let's see, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so paragraph 13.
You mean verse 13?
Verse 13, that thing. clearly states, and we impart this in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual truth to those who possess the Spirit. So that means that if Carrie believes in her heart that Rasputin, in her spirit, in her soul, that Rasputin and all these other people are connected, then there, so it shall be. That will be done on earth as it is in heaven. There it is.
What you're saying is that because she believes it, that makes it reality. Is that what you're saying?
I think that is literally one of the tenets of chaos magic.
Well, yes, that is one of the tenets, yeah.
So, bringing it right back around on that.
Wait, one of the tenets of what?
Chaos magic.
What is chaos magic?
That's like a 3-episode series.
Yes, that is.
Oh.
There's left-hand magic, right-hand magic. I mean, there's...
Yeah.
It is...
There's a lot there.
It's deep. Yeah. It's deep.
You guys have to hook me up with some literature or something to read, like a book or something.
Chaos magic for...
Nothing scary, but something like... Something educational. Because I know nothing of this.
It involves a lot of
manifesting, personal manifestation,
yes,
and belief that, like,
okay,
just because you believe something to be true, then you can manifest it into reality.
Wow.
So there's a lot there, and that's really.
Do both left hand and right hand invoke sigils, or is that just one? I can't remember.
They both do, honestly.
It can do that.
Carrie, do you know the difference? What?
I mean, I don't know. That's one of those things that people debate, like tarot cards upside down or right side up, and then holding crystals with your left hand, right hand. So
I think it's all based on the person. Like, you give it the strength.
Well,
right.
I mean, that would be the most chaos magic answer out there. Is that?
I mean, you're the one bringing it in.
You are the magician, and you are the one that conjures.
Is that why you guys, like, sleep with your tarot cards?
That's not the reason, but it coincides with the reason.
No, I'm just trying to understand.
So the reason you sleep with tarot cards is, I mean, and not everybody does it. It's all about whoever, you know, like whoever has the cards.
Because they bought you some beverages at the bar, and they were talking nice to you.
They bought you dinner.
Yep.
And then
now you just reward them.
The deal. There's a
presumption. And you just reward them.
It's about the implication.
It's about the implication. So, no. You are trying to basically imprint yourself on the card. So, like,
okay,
you are getting the cards to recognize you and your spirit and your aura, and so they will read for you. So, like, you couldn't pick up my cards. You can pick up some of my cards, but you couldn't pick up, like, the deck that I use the most office. You couldn't pick them up and have them just immediately work for you. Well, they might give you some answers, but it would be in a different language because it's in my language.
Huh.
If that makes any sense.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it becomes like a fingerprint, like your soul print.
Wow.
Yep. So... pretty awesome.
Okay. I've got the diagram.
Okay.
Oh, she's made it.
Okay. This is like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
6 degrees of Aleister Crowley?
Yes. All right. So we're going to start on one end with L. Ron Hubbard, who was known to pal around with Jack Parsons.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley knew each other.
Well,
they all lived together.
No. Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard lived together in California. Jack Parsons was a disciple of Aleister Crowley.
Oh, I thought Aleister was there.
This was in his twilight years.
Listen, I saw the Drunk History episode.
Yeah, they Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons knew each other, but just saying that Jack Parsons was a disciple of Aleister Crowley.
I don't think I've seen that Drunk History episode. I need to watch that. Fucking love Drunk History.
Continue.
Yeah, that show's funny.
Yeah. Sorry. Let's hear it.
Okay. So then Jack Parsons knew Aleister Crowley, and then Aleister Crowley and Arthur Conan Doyle knew each other because they were both in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
Right.
Doyle and Harry Houdini were friends. They were, you know, friends and enemies at different points in their life, but they remained
frenemies
the whole life.
Frenemies.
Right. Then Houdini actually went to Russia and performed for the royal family there. Rasputin.
Well, it depends on when he performed.
Right. That's the one missing connection. I need to run down what date he was there.
God.
I think I'm satisfied with it.
I think you manifested it and you made it happen, and here we are. Do you have any opinions on chaos magic?
Say it again.
Do you have any opinions on chaos magic? Never mind. It's like, that's like asking, can you tell me about how the ocean works? Like,
well, the gravities.
Can you tell me about the ocean?
There's jellyfish.
I mean, I think we definitely need to put it on our future episode list.
Yes, for sure.
That'd be a month-long series.
Yeah. Chaos magic.
That'd be really interesting. I'd really like that. I think that would be really cool to learn about.
All right, we'll put it on the next. Put it on the list. We'll do it. It'll be fun. All right. So, though Crowley would ardently embrace the metaphysical principles of the Hermetic Order, the Golden Dawn, he would ultimately become entangled in an unfortunate political struggle within the Order. This struggle would conclude in a division of the Golden Dawn into many smaller bodies and the demise of the great Inceptive Fraternity. Undercurrents of discontent were already stirring beneath the surface when Aleister Crowley was initiated into the Outer Order of the Golden Dawn on November 18, 1898. Crowley took the model Perdurabo, which means, I shall endure until the end. The motto was a declaration of intent to reach the highest planes of enlightenment. When Crowley showed a tendency to use his occult powers for evil rather than for good, because Crowley viewed magic as a source of personal power, the adepts of the order, the poet William Butler Yeats among them, decided not to allow him to be initiated into the inner circle. They feared that he would profane the mysteries and unleash powerful magic forces against humanity. Crowley's ouster led to a confrontation in 1900. Crowley refused to accept their decision, and after some astral attacks on Yeats, yes, this man believes that he projected himself into the astral plane in order to conduct fisticuffs with a poet.
Wow. I mean, this sounds like some Doctor Strange shit.
Honestly, this is my
favorite.
Sounds
like a scene out of Doctor Strange.
This is my favorite part. This is my favorite part.
I want to do this. I want to have astral projection fisticuffs.
I just imagine that meme that's like, have at me, sir. Like, I imagine that's exactly how that went. Yeah, just the
old-timey boxer stance.
In Highlanders, so Crowley, let's talk about this astral attack, right? Crowley was wearing a Highlander's tartan with a black Crusader's cross on his breast. Crowley arrived at the Golden Dawn Temple in London, making the sign of the pentacle inverted and shouting menaces at the adepts. Crowley climbed the stairs, but Yeats and two other white magicians came resolutely forward to meet him, ready to protect the holy place at any cost. When Crowley came within range, the forces of good struck out with their feet and kicked him down the stairs.
This is literally a superhero story.
No.
This is Doctor Strange.
In a tartan.
This is Doctor Strange in a tartan.
So Fireball.
This now is literally the LARPers practicing down at the park.
Yes.
Well, don't make the LARPers feel bad. We love the LARPers.
We do love the LARPers.
LARPers would probably be overjoyed to be compared to the psychic battle between Yeats and Crowley.
This is why nerds are the best.
100%. This is why nerds are the best.
I mean, honestly, who would not want to do this?
I mean, honestly, if I could travel back then, period in time, I might be tempted to go back and watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
Get your popcorn ready. Just sitting back watching Crowley's dumpy butt in a Highland tartan getting kicked down the stairs. Oh, sweet Jesus.
Wow. Wow, just wow, guys.
That's why this man's the best. So this almost slapstick vanquishing became known as the Battle of Blythe Road.
Wait a minute. I have a question.
Yes, it did take Blythe Road.
No, that's not it. All right, so keep reading.
Okay. I have your permission to go on?
Yeah, just
Oh, thank you. And has been immortalized in a book of the same name with accounts from Crowley, Yeats, and others.
What the fuck? So you're telling me that an astral mind wizard, a dark astral mind wizard, projected himself astrally to a temple, and then they had a battle, right? So the white magician and the dark magician had a battle on this, but this is all done astrally, so nobody is physically there.
I mean, if the astral part of you dies,
multiple accounts. Who's watching this?
Yeats and Crowley.
I don't know, somebody.
Well, I mean, these are accounts from Crowley, Yeats, and others. My guess being,
Yeats know what happened.
He was there. He kicked him down the stairs.
Yeah, and he wrote it down later.
So it was be like, nah, man.
I didn't lose.
How does this work?
This is like the posturing after the fact.
9 3/4.
I mean,
I
like to picture it as, so physically they were both on Blythe Road, and you know there were other members of the order there, but they were just standing on opposite sides of the street, like concentrating real hard,
like with their fingers to their temples, just like thinking really hard.
That's funny.
Oh, sweet Lord. Yeah, I want to. If I had a Wayback Machine, like, you know, Mr. Peabody, this is definitely where I'm going.
Yeah, I had questions.
Just to watch.
And then you kind of answered the question. Like, the next very next line was you kind of answering the question, but then it just made it even more confusing.
Who are the others?
Multiple people involved. They all
right.
Of this.
Well, there were two other white magicians there, though, okay. But we don't know their names.
They're just the dudes who kicked.
One is Gandalf
yep.
the White.
Well, I mean,
he's
who Saruman was supposed to be. So technically, he's Saruman.
The other one is Albus Dumbledore.
Albus Dumbledore.
Is that pre-burnt hand or post-burnt hand?
Pre-burnt hand.
Yeah.
Pre-burnt hand. This is still timeline for young Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Jude Law Dumbledore.
Jude Law Dumbledore. Okay, right, Merlin. Old Merlin, young Dumbledore, Yeats and Crowley.
Oh. Oh my God. Can't with you people. All right. So, but the war was not won. And Crowley went looking for converts or victims in London while Yeats attempted to stop him with the quote, the requisite spells and exorcisms.
This, oh, good. More psychic.
This
attack.
Sounds fantastic.
God. If you imagine, like, living next door to these guys, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on in your house?
Why does it smell
Gloria.
Like patchouli all the time?
Gloria, they're out there again. Gloria, they're out there standing on the street grunting at each other again, just staring at each other across the street. They're
this
out
is
there.
A time period.
Right, yes. Hey, could you throw out the piss pot? I can't right now, Susan. They're battling in the streets with wands.
This is a time when Carrie could go out in the street and scream at the possums and nobody would care because there's a magic wizard battle going on in the street.
I mean, apparently she could just do it in her head and it'd be like, moments
it
couldn't be in there. Yeah, I can't tell
all attest to it. Astral projection screaming.
So, astral projection onto the possums.
Let's just take a pause, X, for just a second, because we understand that astral projection is a thing. It's a paranormal phenomena. We've talked about it many, many times on the show before, and we're not making fun of people that can astrally project. In fact, like, there's a lot of practices that are devoted
Holly.
To now. What?
Holly
that we had on last week.
Yeah,
astral project.
Yeah. She's a fantastic, she's very talented. We're not making fun of those people. I just think that for two grown-ass men to stand on a road together and stare at each other or however this whole thing went down and then to have accounts of it is a little asinine. So it's not the people that actually believe in this stuff that we're talking about. We're just talking about grown. If you go to
They obviously believe
well,
he Crowley got kicked out because they said he was using his magic for evil.
If you go to the church or the temple or whatever you want to call it, and you confront a man in your mind, then we need to talk, and I have some numbers for you to call. Yes,
Uncle Sam is you.
And I'm also not going to make fun of people that cast spells, because I definitely do spells myself, and you know it's all about that. But for me, it's
about intent.
Huh?
It's about intent.
It's about, well, I mean, it's not, though. Like,
I mean, if your spell doesn't have intent, is it really that powerful?
Well, see, it's about manifestation, I would argue.
I got a manifestation for you.
Oh, no.
God. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So, anyway, just wanted to...
No, it's a good, it's a good point, April. Good point.
Reel it in. We're not sitting here laughing at those people. We're just laughing at two grown-ass old men staring at each other and, like, giving each other the rock eyebrows, I guess.
And one of them wearing,
the
and
people's
one of them
eyebrows.
Wearing a kilt.
One of them wearing a kilt.
Hey, I have a kilt. Don't make fun of kilts.
Yeah, but you don't...
I'm not making fun of kilts.
Yourself.
I'm just... Yeah,
I
but you're not doing
good in
that and astrally attacking somebody.
I mean, I might now.
I mean, he flies through the air. Can we see his...
No, listen, actually, I do...
Yes, you can.
His wing dang doodle.
I do want to back up Crowley on the kilt. I mean, it allows you to just be free for movement for your astral projection battle.
When you think of Savage Warrior, does Braveheart not come into your mind? Just screaming man in a kilt?
Scotch pouch and that little dagger thing.
Hey, listen, you don't have
to tell me.
I'm sorry. You don't have to tell
dagger?
Me. I just think it's funny to astrally project with a kilt on.
When he's not wearing a kilt actively.
Yeah.
So the pouch that you said is called a sporran, and the little dagger is a skidoo.
A skidoo?
Although
it's... Like asthmane?
I mean, I'll carry a skidoo on me.
Skidlawinky-dink. I love you.
Love
is
you
it
too,
going
man.
Off the rails?
Yes, it is.
Several times.
Off the rails.
The right. Rails are on fire.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get us back on the rails
in our
here.
Minds. Astrally, of course.
So, one such spell supposedly sent a vampire that, quote, bit and tore at his flesh as it lay beside Crowley all night.
Why would he let it lay beside him?
I can't get through my section without April stopping me after every sentence.
First of fucking all. So how is he the black magician if motherfucker sent a vampire to lay down with Crowley? Then how is he a white magician if he's using vampires? That's not a thing a white magician does. That's not a thing.
Well, I just want to know, why did he lay there all night? Why didn't he just get up and walk around?
Well, no, it doesn't.
I mean,
it
lays beside him all night.
Why would he get out of bed?
Because he never kicked anyone out of the bed. Because he never kicked anyone out of the bed.
Oh. Even a vampire eating him. Okay.
Anyone.
Anyone. So, despite Yates' supernatural inventions, or interventions rather, one of Crowley's targets, a young painter named Althea Giles, was, quote, finally forced to give away entirely to his baleful fascination, i.e. gave up.
Is that what they called the... I'm about to give you what it means.
Gave up.
About to get it like Stella got it.
Well, she got the groove back. So he gave up the secret of the innermost circle of the Order of the Golden Dawn, which was sex magique.
Magic.
After traveling we gotta continue this story. We're gonna continue. I'm gonna get through my section here.
I have a lot to say.
I know you do. We will discuss this here in a second. Hold on.
I'm still back on the vampire.
So after traveling to Mexico, India, Burma, and doing some climbing in the Himalayas, this man did some
shit. I want you to say bit and tore his flesh like L. Ron Hubbard would say it. I want to hear him.
He bit and tore his flesh. He did the fly your roots. assessing and nulling. These aren't your shoes. These are my shoes. I got them at the thrift store. I do a better L. Ron Hubbard. I'm just trying not to laugh.
My goodness.
So I know I kind of shortened it up here. Well, I'm going to interrupt you now.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about with sex magic. I mean, I feel like that's an episode itself. And when we go into sex magic, we talk about sex magic.
I didn't super go into it here. So we will definitely have to do a future episode on it.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know what that is.
It's a red Hot Chili Peppers album, girl. You got it.
That's how you bring the Antichrist.
Well, I know that.
Well, that's not the only thing you can do with sex magic. There's a lot of things you can do with sex magic.
Well, Carrie, please continue. I know April has been cutting you off.
I'm sorry.
It's an epidemic. I'm trying to astrally project and stop her, but it's just not working.
I'm just in my feelings tonight.
So I know I shortened it up here, but that some climbing in the Himalayas was actually he and another guy named Oscar Eckenstein, led the first expedition to reach the foot of K2. It was the first attempt at climbing K2.
Jesus. Is there anything that's competing to?
I mean, did he do that or did he astrally do it?
No, he actually physically did it. So, like, he spent his whole life off and on climbing mountains, and it was the first attempt at climbing K2.
And he still looked like a dumpy idiot?
No, he was actually... This was when
he doesn't
younger.
Look like
he
a man that's doing
like
a lot of climbing. We'll put it that way.
I feel like...
Yeah, this was when he was younger. He was 27.
And he kind of looks like... even in his, like when he was older, he still looks like those like guys that you don't really know if they're fat or they're strong. You know what I mean?
Dad bod?
No, they're like old-timey bare knuckles boxers.
Okay.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you look like you could either be fat or you could just be really muscly and, like, just
like the, okay. like the old wrestlers.
Yeah, like...
I'm going to send you a picture. I think this is what you're talking about.
Well, April does her research and on Aleister Crowley's body. So, in 1902, Crowley returned to Boleskine House, his home in Inverness, Scotland, located on Loch Ness, of where else would it be, to attempt the operation of Ambrelin? I think that's
right.
A magical working for the purpose of integrating the higher self or holy guardian angel. This mansion was later owned by Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, and unfortunately, it did burn down in 2015. The ritual required at least 6 months of preparation, celibacy, and abstinence from alcohol. However, it also includes the summoning of the 12 kings and dukes of hell, which I do. We covered them in a past episode, didn't we? The 12 kings and dukes of hell? When we did Dante's Inferno, I think it was?
I think we did.
Bind them and remove their negative influences from the magician's life. Whilst Crowley was in the process of performing the lengthy ritual, he was called to Paris, and, according to legend, he never banished the demons he had summoned, leading to strange happenings occurring in and around Boleskine House. Crowley later said that his experiments with black magic had simply, quote, gotten out of hand. I'd say if you didn't complete your ritual and bind all the spirits, I'd say that's more than just getting out of hand. I think you fucked up.
I think it got out of your hand. Like, literally.
Didn't Led Zeppelin record one of their albums? Was it The Song Remains the Same?
I'm not a big Led Zeppelin guy.
I'm going to Google that real quick. I think they recorded some of that at that house.
I feel like we discussed when we did Dante's Inferno, I feel like we discussed this occurrence where they were summoned by ye olde Crowley. But I'm kind of wondering what he summoned them for.
Well, this ritual, it's to bind them and then remove their negative influences from his life. So he's actually summoning them to get rid of them, which
he sounds like the One Ring. He's trying to lead them into the darkness and bind them. You know what I'm saying? Like the One Ring from Lord of the Rings.
Oh my God.
Oh, you can be nerdy all you want, but when I do something nerdy, you're just like this motherfucker.
Okay.
Yeah, I see.
Okay, here's something interesting about the house. So, they were talking about, you know, Jimmy Page owned it. So, looking here, I found this on Wikipedia. So Jimmy Page wasn't there very often, but he left it in the care of one of his friends, this guy named Malcolm Dent. And I guess, although Dent was skeptic of paranormal, he soon started to experience strange occurrences. After a few weeks, he heard strange rumblings from the hallway, which stopped when he investigated but resumed after he closed the bedroom door. Then, later on, it said that he had the most terrifying night of his life at this house. He woke one night to hear what sounded like a wild animal snorting and banging outside his bedroom door. It went on for some time, and it wasn't until morning that Dent dared open the door, and there was nothing there. Dent added, whatever was there was pure evil. Another friend who stayed there awoke one night claiming she had been attacked by some kind of devil. Other occurrences, such as chairs switching places, doors slamming open and closed for no reason, and carpets and rugs rolling up inexplicably, failed to deter Dent from staying. Dent met his wife there and raised his family there. So, that'd be a pretty cool place to investigate, don't you think?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I'm just going to say two words. Sex magic.
Okay. I'm glad you fixated on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what summoned him.
I mean, those are two words. So, the ruins of the house are actually still there. So, it did burn down, but the ruins are there and were placed on a list of historic buildings.
Ruins.
It's like just the outer walls of the house are kind of left.
God, this freaky shit he must have done in that house.
Well, and there was a lot of rumors of, like, weird stuff happening there before he even moved there. Supposedly, it was built on top of the ruins of a 10th century church that burned to the ground during a service and killed everyone that was inside.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect place to build a house.
Yeah, so at the bottom of the hill is a cemetery with long stories of all kinds of weird stuff, including a minister that raised the dead and then laid them back in their graves.
Like
yeah,
a necromancer?
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Loch Ness is at the bottom with the Loch Ness monster.
I'm just saying that this area is the plane of existence, the veil between the dimensions is a lot thinner there, so that's why there's all these weird occurrences, paranormal occurrences that are happening. Just putting that out there.
There's a lot of ties to the Inverness area and my favorite, to a Day Danann.
The alien.
Hashtag
the
alien.
The Phalians.
Hashtag aliens.
The Phalians.
Hashtag probing.
The Fae and the aliens. The Phalians.
I mean, look, is it really a Freaks and Geeks episode if we don't mention probing at least once?
No.
No.
So, after this, in August of 1903, Crowley married for the first time a woman named Rose Edith Kelly. It was a marriage of convenience to prevent her from having to agree to an arranged marriage. Crowley was actually friends with her brother, Gerald. However, the marriage appalled the Kelly family and damaged his friendship with Rose's brother, Gerald. While they were on their honeymoon in Cairo, they claimed to be a prince and a princess and rented an apartment where Crowley set up a temple room and began invoking ancient Egyptian deities. According to Crowley, Rose began channeling and told him, "They are waiting for you." She explained that they were the god Horus and led him to a museum where she directed him to a mortuary stele known as the Stele of Ankh-Ifen Khonsu, which Crowley believed he was the reincarnation of that. Crowley thought, Crowley thought that it was important to note that the Steele's exhibit number was 666.
Oh, Lord.
According to Crowley's later statements, on the 8th of April that year, he heard a disembodied voice that claimed to be that of Awas, the messenger of Horus. Crowley said that he wrote down everything the voice told him over the course of the next 3 days and titled it The Book of the Law. The Book of the Law proclaims a new age of humanity, the Aeon of Horus. The previous Aeon is the Aeon of Osiris, which requires man looking to religious leaders to teach him about the divine. And during the Aeon of Horus, man will look inward for enlightenment.
That's beautiful.
Quote, "Life is no longer to be seen as something to be endured with suffering and sorrow, but as a divine, ecstatic, continuous unfolding. Nature and life are continuous. Man is immortal, or at least can be, potentially." Now, the main precept of Thelema, which is what Crowley dubbed his religion, is "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." It's often misunderstood and taken out of context. Used properly as Crowley intended it, it refers to the will. This is our true and perfect path on which our holy guardian angel guides us when we have learned to hear and to follow our higher selves. For those who are called, it refers to the great work. Capital G, capital W, great work. Do what thou wilt does not mean do what you like. It is the apotheosis of freedom. It is also the strictest possible bond. Do what thou wilt, then do nothing else. Let nothing deflect thee from that austere and holy task. Liberty is absolute to do thy will, but seek to do any other thing whatever, and instantly obstacles must arise. Every act that is not in definite course of that one orbit is erratic, a hindrance.
Hashtag truer words never spoken, you know what I'm saying? You gotta break all those bonds that you have so that you are free to do anything that you like that you set your mind to.
You have to follow your own path.
Exactly. Complete what you were put here to do, basically.
Funny enough that you mentioned L. Ron Hubbard, where what Crowley teaches is for break all of your, what is it, break all of your like ties and stuff like that, your beliefs so that you are free to do anything. Scientology is the opposite, where they break your beliefs so you can only believe one thing.
True.
Indeed. I think April's given up. She's astrally projecting herself into the bed.
April's still thinking about that vampire.
I'm still thinking about that goddamn vampire.
And how sexy he is. Just sitting next to Aleister Crowley, just nibbling on. He's probably like nibbling on his ear, like.
The cat, when the cats sleep with me, and they like do that like making biscuits thing, but they do it with their claws on my legs in the middle of the night. It's like, get the fuck out of here, you hot ass cat.
They are little freaking heating elements.
Little heaters. Get out of here.
Little making bread thing.
Yeah, they do that thing with their hands, you know?
Their hands.
Their paws. They're kneading. I've astrally projected. I'm so gone.
Are you on a different plane?
I'm on a different plane. I had food poisoning for like the last, 3 days? Today's the last day of it. So...
It's been great.
It's been awesome.
Where did you eat?
We went to River.
River Brauhaus.
Yeah, it was a German restaurant.
Yeah.
She got the schnitzel.
No, I didn't get schnitzel.
They did.
Mm-mm, I got spitzel.
Oh, my bad. She got the L.
She got the L.
Yeah, a little
something extra. All right, so in 1920, he moved to Sicily, where he established the Abbey of, say the word again, is it Thelma?
Thelema.
Thelema, all right, as the headquarters for his new religion. Okay. Here he pursued spiritual enlightenment, declaring himself a Sicimus. Is that right?
Ipsissimus.
Beyond the Gods in 1921. So this is in Sicily, okay? So think about what's going on in Sicily in 1920, right? You got Mussolini coming on board. You know, you got the mafia, like, strong. So this
I think
is
that
what's
was
going
New
on
York,
in Sicily.
But okay.
No, this is... during this time in Sicily, the mafia was huge. So
this is where they're headquartered.
Yeah, so... He also experimented with sex and drugs. In 1923, an Englishman died in mysterious circumstances after a ritual during which he was said to have consumed the blood of a cat. The British press and the Italian fascist government were equally appalled. Crowley was expelled from Sicily, the abbey closed, and the group dispersed. So Crowley was
saying.
In the saloon.
That food poisoning, man, that'll get you every time.
Well, the cats were probably kneading. They were kneading on him, and he's like, screw you guys. Cut him open and drank the blood.
Right? Although impoverished, disgraced, and a near skeletal heroin addict. Interesting. Crowley never lacked followers. He fathered several children, most of them illegitimately, and was still in demand as a medium and a magus.
Yep.
To the end, designing a new sequence of tarot cards and commentating on it at some length in his book of Thoth of 1944. See, I got all the words this time, Chris. He died in Hastings in 1947 during the Thelema. Why can't I get that? Chris, I'm feeling your pain.
Yeah.
Thelema, one newspaper referred to Crowley as the wickedest man in the world. He would have denied this, claiming that his work was truly good because it freed men from earthly rules and opened up truly spiritual experiences. But there can be no doubt that he also enjoyed his notoriety. and his fame only increased after death. There are still groups who call themselves Salemites, still those who use his tarot cards and read his books. He was taken up by counterculture of the 1960s and can be seen on the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, and is also the namesake of one of my favorite Aussie songs, Mr. Crowley.
One of my favorite stories about that song is, I think it was Zach Wilde that maybe I saw told the story, that he was like in a studio and Ozzy comes in and he was like, oh, who's that? I mean, he used a bad word. Who's that guy on the wall? And Zach Wilde was like, that's Aleister Crowley. You wrote a song about him. And Ozzy was just like, oh, okay.
Oh,
so
did
apparently,
I?
Apparently Ozzy was doing a little astral traveling himself when he wrote that song.
Very,
yeah.
Very interesting that Aleister Crowley takes a lot of influence, or what appears to be influence, from Egyptian.
Yeah, I thought that was very intriguing as well.
I mean, you got Horus, Osiris, Thoth. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't stick Ra in there somewhere.
Right.
I mean, he gets a mention.
Well, I mean, that's...
Would he?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
Well, I was going to say that I just think it's interesting, the influence in the whole counterculture thing and the influence in sort of rock and roll. I think it was my husband that was telling me there was a story. I can't recall who he said it was, but they said that they had seen Aleister Crowley. Now, mind you, this is years after he died, that they had seen him at somebody's concert and that he was backstage at another concert at the same time. Now, these people are probably all doped up, whatever.
What, is he living like Tupac? He faked his death?
I don't know, but this is some sort of story, because I remember talking to Kevin about it one time. About
the astral projecting.
You know, no, but just in general about Aleister Crowley. And,
no, he's astral projecting.
Yeah, but after...
Oh, my God.
I think it's very sad that...
In the music industry.
A couple of years ago, I got to meet Andrew WK, and I noticed that... So he signed with a symbol that Thelema uses.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so when he signs his name, he signs with a symbol that Thelema uses, which is a unicrossal hexagram, and it's a six-pointed star that you make without lifting a pen.
Interesting. I
wonder how long it takes to actually get that right.
I don't know. I think it's kind of difficult.
You probably have to practice.
Yes. Sitting there with like tons of pieces of paper that just have failed 6-pointed stars on them. I think it's disappointing that the end of his life, and like he just sort of devolved into drugs and what, like living in halfway houses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like such an interesting figure who legit had astral projection battles in the streets of London.
Wearing a kilt.
Yeah, and it just ends up kind of sad. Like,
yeah,
it's sad that he didn't go out in a blaze of glory in a national projection war.
All right, well, I think that's it for tonight. We'll go ahead and astral project ourselves out of here.
Yeah.
Well, April has already. What are you talking about?
Hand it into the ether.
All right,
guys.
Are you all right, April?
I'm fucking dying. So thank you guys for the episode tonight. It was wonderful. We will talk a little bit more about Aleister in the coming months when we start talking about some of the magical side of the house, which now we know we need to do that. So we'll talk about him just a little bit more later. And if you guys have any thoughts or interest in whatever's going to be happening in the future, then let us know. And give us a like on Facebook, and that's it. We hope to see you next week.
Yeah, and check out our creepy picture of Alistair that we've posted.
Yep. Bye, guys.
Peace out.
Bye.